Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the LA Steel Show. I'm Lila.
And I'm Leo.
And tonight we have on an interview that we did last night in Lakeville, Connecticut at Q103.3. The interview is with Larry Dorman. Larry Dorman is the Public Affairs Coordinator for AFSCME, Council for Union. And because Monday was Labor Day, we had him on. He's going to talk about the state of labor, you know, nationally in Connecticut and what's going on with the unions and what's going on in Connecticut with politicians and stuff. So that'll be on about 8:30, is that right?
Yeah.
Leo? Yeah. So in the meantime, we're going to bring you some news. If you just give us a second, we'll get it assembled and bring it to you. We'll probably look on some sites and read of the news right off the site, I think is probably the best way to go. We had some things that we had done last night, but there's always more news every single day, as you know.
Yeah, and we'll update you on
Some things that Leo has maybe bookmarked in here, so we'll get right to it as soon as he can bring it up. As wonderful as computers are, sometimes they're a wee bit slow. Here it is. Let's see what's going on here. Okay.
Okay, hang on a second.
The truth vibrations. I wonder what that means. Okay, here's something. What's that?
Oh, yeah, man against the world, man.
Mind reading machine can convert, that's interesting, can convert thoughts into speech. That would make a big difference for people who are paralyzed or who have some kind of impairment in the speech processes or have had maybe a stroke or something.
Well, let's see. Researchers have been able to translate brain signals into speech using sensors attached to the surface of the brain for the first time. The breakthrough, which is up to 90% accurate, offers a way to communicate for paralyzed patients who cannot speak and could eventually lead to being able to read anyone's thoughts.
Ooh.
We were beside ourselves with excitement when it started working, said Professor Bradley Greger, a bioengineer at Utah University who led this team of researchers. It was just one of the moments when everything came together.
It's an interesting kind of thing that they've worked on. It can be used for so much good, but it could also be used for so much bad.
Good, yeah. We have been able to decode spoken words using only signals from the brain with a device that has promised for long-term use in paralyzed patients who cannot now speak. I would call it a brain reading, and we hope that in 2 or 3 years we'll be able to use for our paralyzed patients.
I'm wondering if someone's in a coma who can't talk and who is thinking, if you would be able to
communicate with them.
With
the experimental breakthrough came when the team attached 2 button-sized grids of 16 tiny electrodes to the speech center for the brain of an epileptic patient. The sensors were attached to the surface of the brain. The patient had had part of his skull removed for another operation to treat his condition. Using the electrodes, the scientists recorded brain signals in a computer as the patient repeatedly read each of 10 words that might be used to a paralyzed person.
Useful to a paralyzed person.
Yeah, yes, no, hot, cold, hungry, thirsty, hello, goodbye, or more and less. Then they got him to repeat the words to the computer, and it was able to match the brain signals for each word 76% to 90% of the time. The computer picked up the patient's brain waves as he talked and did not use any voice recognition software. Because just thinking a word and not saying it, is thought to produce the same brain signals, Professor Greger and his team believe that soon they will be able to have translation device and voice box that repeats the word you are thinking.
Wouldn't that be wonderful for people who are just locked?
What is more, the brains of people who are paralyzed are often healthy and produce the same signals as those in able-bodied people. It is just they are blocked by injury from reaching the muscle. The researchers said the method needs improvement, but could lead in a few years to clinical trials on paralyzed people who cannot speak due to so-called locked-in syndrome. This is proof of concept, Professor Greger said. We've proven these signals can tell you what the person is saying well above chance. But we need to be able to do more words with more accuracy before it is something a patient really might find useful. People eventually could benefit from a wireless device that converts thought into computer-spoken words, include those paralyzed by stroke, disease, or injury. Now that Hawkins, that's how he communicates through a computer.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean the problem is completely solved and we can all go home. Well, anyway, it's an interesting thing that they can do that.
It would be wonderful if it could unlock people and be able to, they wouldn't be so lonely and they'd be able to talk and get their wants.
They can communicate.
Boy.
Here's climate will not cost taxpayer more than $1 billion annually.
I am scientists manipulating the Earth's climate. U.S. government wants control of every worker's pay. That should be interesting. Go down to that. Let's see. Let me read that. Instead of employers deducting income tax, then paying gross salaries to employees, the gross monthly payments would go to an HMRC-run tax calculator, which would then pass the net salary to the worker. The reform would mean the end of traditional monthly pay slips because employers would no longer be able to tell workers how much tax they had been paid each month. The tax authorities are consulting accountants, lawyers, and businesses on the plans to reform the pay-as-you-earn system. The potential shakeup has emerged after HMRC confirmed that inaccurate data means millions of people will be made to pay back underpaid taxes, and millions more will get rebates.
And that's in England, and that's the, what is it called, the HM Revenue and Customs.
That means his Majesty's.
Oh, Majesty's Revenue and Customs.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, good
it
luck
says we might
guys.
Go to it, too.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Pay is based on a tax codes that eliminate each taxpayer's annual income. That estimate taxpayer's annual income, but accountants say the system is increasingly failing to reflect the reality of modern work, where people frequently change jobs and benefits. In the 2 years from 2008 to 2010, almost 6 million people paid the wrong amount of income tax, leaving some facing demands for repayment and others qualifying for rebates. HMRC
has more than 18 million open cases relating to wrongly paid taxes predating 2008. Under the current pay system, employers calculate a worker's tax liability and deduct the appropriate share before paying the rest to the employee. Employees then give HMRC an annual summary of each worker's pay and tax, which the tax authorities then assess to see if more or less tax is owed. To make pay more accurate, Treasury ministers have suggested that the employers should provide HMRC with monthly updates on workers' salary payments and other financial details. What a bunch of paperwork. Such real-time information could then be used as the basis of new centralized deduction system.
Well, they want their money right away.
Which would give HMRC an unprecedented role in workers' monthly salary payments. Oh, boy.
They're crooked bastards. I mean, this is frightening stuff.
Mm. I don't like that idea at all.
That information to the government, you know, it's enough. You got to give them all your tax crap anyway at the end of the year. But you know, to give them, I don't know. This is wrong.
Well, they do a whole lot of things in Britain.
Britain is like the world's worst place to live. Didn't save the Labour Party.
Yeah.
He crucified it in this country.
That's true.
Yeah, but it's worthless. Mutating viruses, mandatory vaccines loom.
Yeah.
The Gulf Blue Plague is evolving biologically into a petrochemical military-industrial complex, a chemically-induced breeding ground for mutating viruses, making New World Order mandatory vaccines easier to justify on an unwitting public. Vaccines are considered by many scientists and medical professionals as weapons of mass destruction. Mandatory flu vaccines are being promoted by the organized demons that created this year's risk of super flu, according to Dr. Len Horowitz. For 4 months, the PMIC has continued poisoning or gassing Gulf region residents with an unprecedented amount of car exit chemical compound. Don't even ask me. Butoxylphenol, poisonous to human blood, kidneys, liver, and central nervous system. Eventually, car exit also ruptures blood, red blood cells, causing internal bleeding. The PMIC is ensuring that millions of residents are poisoned, fulfilling Agenda 21 depopulation. Core exit spraying continues today, blown further inland by tropical storm and hurricane winds.
Getting into people's systems by breathing.
Yeah, and we read last week.
Yeah, it's in their bloodstreams.
Oil is in their blood right now. Virtually, literally in their blood. Are being promoted by organized demons. For 4 months, PMIC has continued poisoning Gulf regions. I just read that. Okay. One of the two men who sounded the alarm about looming high death toll is now dead, Matt Simmons. Whistleblower Hugh Kaufner is the other individual who warned about millions of people anticipated to perish due to the genocidal acts against Americans in the Deep South and Florida. Now it is reported the Gulf of Mexico is a biological time bomb that is undoubtedly evolving into a chemically induced breeding ground for mutating viruses. All the aspects exist in the Gulf right now and have been established for over 3 months. Their ongoing manipulated evolution into a viral plague or viral epidemic is evident, yet has been ignored. Mandatory vaccine agenda. Since the H1N1 flu vaccine campaign, now a proven fraudulent conspiracy involving a fake pandemic, numerous medical professionals, scientists, and journalists have written about the looming threat of forced vaccinations. On June 10, 2009, Stephen Lenman wrote, "At least three U.S. federal laws should concern all Americans and suggest that what may be coming, mandatory vaccinations for hyped, non-existent threats like H1N1, or swine flu. Vaccines and drugs like Tamiflu endanger human health, but are hugely profitable to drug company manufacturers."
In preparation for today's PMIC biochemical attack on Americans, an act of war on July 21, 2004, Project BioShield Act of 2004 became law to provide protections and countermeasures against chemical, radiological, or nuclear agents that may be used in terrorist acts against the United States. By giving the National Institutes of Health contracting flexibility, infrastructure improvements, and expediting the scientific peer review process and streamlining the Food and Drug Administration and approval process of countermeasures. Also in the Bush regime, he secretly signed as part of the 2006 Defense Appropriations Act, H.R. 2863, the Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act, letting HHS Secretary declare any disease an epidemic or national emergency requiring mandatory vaccinations. Also in the Bush regime, the Pandemic and All Hazards Preparedness Act became law effective December 19, 2006, amending the Public Health Service Act with respect to public health security and all hazard preparedness and response for other purposes.
It's all stuff that they'll tell you, is it?
No.
I'd never knew that. Nobody ever announced that crap.
The underlying aims of the mandatory vaccinations, depopulation, and population control was highlighted again this week in the article, Vaccinate the World, Gates, Rockefeller Seek Global Population Reduction, featured on the Intel Hub. Daniel Taylor writes, the global elite has launched a worldwide operation against an unaware population to reduce and control fertility. Vaccines and even stable food crops have been modified to achieve these goals. The Gavi Alliance, founded in 2000 with the Gates Foundation, helps aims to vaccinate all the third world, according to Taylor. The member organizations of Gavi are listed on the group's website, which include national governments of donor and developing countries, the Bill and Melinda Gates Children's Vaccine Program, the International Federation of Pharmaceutical Manufacturers, the Rockefeller Foundation, the World Bank Group, World Health Organization.
And UNICEF.
Taylor furthers, the fact that such a global mechanism like Gavi exists in the hands of outspoken population control advocates for delivering vaccines to millions of people across the world should be disconcerting, to say the least, especially when confronted with the mountains of documentation proving that anti-fertility vaccines have been researched and delivered by the World Health Organization with grant money from the Rockefeller Foundation. Bill Gates reaffirmed the global population control agenda during a recent TED conference presentation in which he stated, the world today has 68 billion people.
6.8 billion
people. That's headed up to about 9 billion. Now, if we do a really great job on new vaccines, health care, reproductive health services, we could lower that perhaps by 10 or 15%.
As Jury and Messing reports, the World Health Organization, one of Gavi's partners, teamed up with the World Bank and UN Population Fund in the 1970s under the Task Force on Vaccines for Fertility Regulation. Acts as a...
The Task Force acts as a
global coordinating body of anti-fertility vaccine R&D and the various working groups and supports research on different approaches such as anti-sperm, anti-ovum vaccines, and vaccines designed to neutralize the biological function of HCG. The task force has succeeded in developing a prototype of an anti-HCG vaccine.
I'm not sure what HCG is.
I don't either, but human something, I'm sure.
Soon after anti-fertility vaccines were successful...
Human chronic
gonadotropin.
So in other words, the shrinking of the gonads,
yeah,
or the shrinking of the testosterone. Sperm, rather.
Soon after anti-fertility vaccines were successfully developed, HCG-containing tetanus vaccines were deployed across multiple third-world countries. Many of these countries were specifically targeted in the U.S. government's 1974 National Security Memorandum 200 document for population reduction. The document recommended at the time in 1974 that injectable contraceptives receive further funding. Rural populations of the third world have caught on to possible effects of vaccination. Their fears are dismissed as rumors and myths by the mainstream media that fails to report on the established precedents of anti-fertility vaccine research. Often those reassuring that the vaccines are safe are the very organizations engaged in population reduction efforts. A 2006 press release from UNICEF, which is involved with vaccinating many third world countries, quotes the Assistant Project Officer for Health in Ethiopia's Southern Nations, Teresit Asifa. I never really heard of that.
In other places, women of this age often stay away, said Ms. Teresit. All sorts of misguided rumors go around that the injections will sterilize them or harm them in some way. But here the village elders are on board. They are here encouraging the women to come along. In a small Aboriginal community in outback Australia, near Halls Creek, Western Australia, there was a mystery about a missing generation. After investigating, it was learned that the women of the community had been used as infertility research subjects. And now the United Nations World Health Organization is pushing hard to impose global consumer taxes to help fund its various programs. Son of a bitch. These programs include a proposal to tax the Internet to pay for vaccines for third world countries, recipients of the unwanted H1N1 vaccine leftovers. American women just said no to having. Heavy marketing targeted pregnant women, many of whom promptly miscarried. Son of a bitch. These bastards are something else. These guys, I mean, this is sick. The Gates Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, the Buffetts, the bastards, all these bastards, they gotta die. Obama appointed to the International Ocean Council included
Co-Chairman John Holdren,
Obama's science and technology advisor and depopulation enthusiast, who advocates sterilization through infertility drugs in water and food, plus forced abortions in his book, Eco-Science. As Dr.
Mark Serkis
illuminated, unlike Russia's government that disputed toxic survival supplies to Chernobyl survivors.
The U.S. government has done no such thing to Gulf Coast survivors. Survival and health care of those suffering most are no concern to Obama and his wife, or Health Secretary Kathleen Sebelius, the latter also appointed to Agenda 21's National Ocean Council.
Both are crying out loud.
How about that?
Son of a bitch.
In the article, Censored Gulf News, Terror in the Deep South for Agenda 21, Disinformation and Depopulation, Dupre wrote, a look at the fabric of Sebelius' brand of health sheds more light on the Gulf Coast, starting with Margaret Sanger. Sebelius' major support is by the organization founded by Sanger, Planned Parenthood Federation, in her 1930s publication, The Birth Control Review. Sanger openly supported Nazi Germany's infanticide program, championed Adolf Hitler's Aryan white supremacy goal. Before World War II, she commissioned Nazi Ernest Rudin, director of the German Medical Health Medical Experimentation Program Atrocities, to serve as an advisor to her organization.
This is Planned Parenthood. Sanger planned genetically engineering the human race. She called for elimination of human weeds, cessation of charity due to its prolonging lives of the unfit, and segregation and promoting reproduction of the unfit. In 1939...
Excuse me.
Bless you there. You all right?
Yeah.
In 1939, Sanger organized the Negro Project to eliminate members of what she thought to be an inferior race, stating the masses of Negroes, particularly in the South, still breeding carelessly and disastrously, with the results that the increase among Negroes, even more than among whites, is from that portion of the population least intelligent and fit.
Sanger led the now prevalent tactic of using religion to pulpit propaganda into Americans, so they acted against their best interest in an opposition to Christianity. Monsais writes of her intention to hire 3 or 4 colored ministers to travel to various black enclaves to propagandize birth control. The most successful educational approach to the Negro is through a religious appeal. We do not want a word to go out that we want to exterminate the Negro population, and the minister is the man who can straighten out that idea if it ever occurs to any of their more rebellious members. Sanger targeted religious groups, blacks, Hispanics, American Indians, for destruction. Sanger and Hitler were involved Lucifer worship and were energized by the same dark spiritual forces, according to Montes. The U.S. Health Secretary Kathleen Sebelius championed Sanger's Planned Parenthood Federation as a long-term member. When Obama appointed Sebelius as Secretary of Health, Cecilia Richards, President of Planned Parenthood Federation of America, the leading U.S. sexual and reproductive health care advocate and provider, promptly published a letter stating, "We applaud Governor Kathleen Sebelius' confirmation as Secretary of Health and Human Services. She is an excellent choice to lead HHS and has a proven track record of increasing access to affordable care."
Okay, I got to ask one thing.
Hmm.
Why were none of these people questioned, or why were none of these people, why were none of these appointments knocked down by the Republicans, okay, or the Christian-based people, all right? And you know why, folks? Because they're all whores and they're all globalists. And they all want to kill you, all right? So that's why.
It suits them all.
It suits their purpose. They don't give a crap about you. They want to kill you, all right? And trust me, read the stuff.
And they don't want you to reproduce.
And if you think you think that's crap, you're full of crap, okay? So Sebelius was the U.S. driving force behind the World Health Organization's 2009 hazardous fraudulent H1N1 vaccine campaign. She advocated first injecting pregnant women. This woman is a Satanist bitch. Okay, with a biochemical
that induced spontaneous abortions, forced miscarriages.
Leftover H1N1 vaccines were then sent to the Third World, generously donated by Obama and Sebelius and their eugenic cronies.
Well, that's after they worked on American women, they just gave it to the world.
And the American women said, "Fuck you, we don't want it." Okay, years will pass before the 2009 giant human research reveals if women who took the vaccine and or their daughters are sterile. And now, ladies, it's time for your 2010 dose. The big 2009 H1N1 scare propaganda did not work well, and that many people wised up to not take it, including people who helped make it and doctors, plus Obama's family. All right, remember we read
yeah.
that? Yeah. And for people to clamor for vaccinations, the big 2010 scare will have to be scarier, possibly a mutated N1H1 killer that just so happens to manifest in the Gulf Coast region. All right.
Deborah Dupre, with postgraduate science and education degrees from U.S. and Australian universities, has been a human and environmental rights advocate for 25 years in the U.S., Vanuatu, that's out in the Indian Ocean, I think, or someplace out there.
Support her work by subscribing to her articles and forwarding the link of this article to friends. You can go to her site at Vaccine Liberty or Death. Vaccine Liberty or Death. See her book, rather, plus Compassion Film Project DVDs.
It's off of Australia.
I don't know about
that. It's an island.
This is a frightening. This is really
yeah.
true. This is true stuff, folks. And I hope you bookmark this. Check it out.
Read it for yourself.
It's from theexaminer.com. All right? And that's called Censored Gulf News. Mutating viruses, mandatory vaccines.
And last night I read that there were places in the Gulf that are off limits. They don't let anybody in.
They won't let anybody in.
So what's going on there?
Well, they got tons of washed up stuff they can't get rid of. Eugenics, the real reason for legalized abortion.
For almost 40 years, we've been told that the legalization of abortion was about reproductive freedom, women's rights, and choice. Now, an explosive new documentary is exposing this rhetoric as nothing more than marketing hype designed to conceal a nasty hidden agenda. With a mountain of documentation, MAFA 21 is proving to audiences all across America that the real motivation behind legalization of abortion was eugenics and racial genocide. In just over 2 hours, the documentary shows that the legalization of abortion was part of a campaign that had been created, promoted, and financed by a small cartel of ultra-wealthy elitists.
Most frightening of all, MAFA, M-A-A-F-A 21, shows that this effort continues today with massive financial and political backing from a new generation of ultra-wealthy elitists. Viewers are also stunned to learn that it was the American eugenics movement that gave rise to the Nazi effort to create racial purity, and that this effort was in large measure funded with dollars from American corporations. They also learned that the first anti-abortion organizations in America were radical civil rights groups of the 1960s, whose leaders had seen that eugenics and black genocide were the driving force behind the call for legalized abortion. Yeah, that just seems weird, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Going to the full article or so.
We weren't.
Yeah, but we're not moving for some reason.
That's okay. It's almost time for interview anyway.
Okay. Some people are also surprised to learn that the numerous links among Americans' number one abortion provider, Planned Parenthood, its founder, Margaret Sanger, and the American Eugenics Movement. They learned that Sanger gave a speech to a chapter of the Ku Klux Klan and was then invited back to speak to 12 similar groups, as she wrote in her autobiography. They learned that Planned Parenthood was an integral part of the sterilization boards that operated in more than 30 states. They learned that Sanger once tried to merge Planned Parenthood with the American Eugenics Society. And the revelation goes on, and each one is fully documented. The reality is that MAFA's 21 is a primer on power, corruption, and betrayal. Ironically, within days after the first edition of MAFA 21 was released, U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg was being interviewed by a reporter for the New York Times and made the following statement when asked about Roe versus Wade, the decision that legalized abortion. Frankly, I had thought that at the time Roe was decided, there was concern about population growth, and particularly growth in populations that we don't want to have too many of. That's our darling liberal Ginsburg. Here is the most radical abortion proponent that ever has been on the Supreme Court, openly conceding that the argument made in Moffitt 21 are absolutely accurate. She is admitting that the legalization of abortion was not about women's rights or reproductive freedom. It was about eliminating certain groups of people. In other words, it was about eugenics.
Hmm.
More than 20,000 copies of Moffitt 21 have already been distributed on DVD, and it being shown in theaters, churches, college campuses, and conventions across the country. It has even been shown twice in the Congressional Visitor Center. Audience reactions run the gamut from sadness to shock and rage. There is no disputing that the content of Moffitt 21 can be a little overwhelming, but it connects the dots in a way that makes it clear why the abortion holocaust is happening.
Anyway, that's
two more paragraphs. Legalized abortion has killed 50 million unborn children so far in America, and it kills more than 3,000 more every day. At least now, people will no longer be able to deceive themselves into thinking that this is happening for one reason, when in reality, it's happening for a totally different, totally unrelated reason. And the final analysis, MAFA, M-A-A-F-A 21, does what all good documentaries do. It exposes what the media have been hiding and tells you what the political establishment doesn't want you to know. To learn more, go to MAFA, M-A-F-A-21.com. So,
okay.
Man, I'll tell you, it's sicker and sicker all the time, don't it?
Yeah, and it's about time for our interview with Larry Dorman.
Yeah.
So
I'll put that on in a second here. Obama in reverse. Yes, we can. Thank you, Satan. What?
Why don't you put that on while you're
keeping
up
the
audio.
Obama here. Obama thanks Satan. Yes, we can equals thank you, Satan.
Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
Seven times Obama declared,
yes, we can. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. Yes, we can.
What you're listening to now is the audio from those seven clips you just watched playing backwards.
Thank you, Satan.
Reversal reveals the hidden power behind the name.
As you say. As you say. As you say.
You play it backwards and says, yeah, thank you, Satan. Yeah, as God is telling you, thank you, Satan. Yes, we can.
American creed. Yes, we can. And you say, dear from the grandma. And you say, dear from the grandma. And you say, dear from the grandma. Yes, we can. When there was despair in the Dust Bowl and the Lord said to their ancestors during the... And you say, the Lord said to their ancestors during the... And you say, the Lord said to their ancestors during the... And you say, a new sense of common purpose. Yes, we can. And you say, the Christian life is messing. Thank you, say. The birth of life is now sooner. Thank you, say. The birth of life is now sooner. And a democracy was saved. Yes, we can. She was there for the buses in Montgomery. Here, Mike, I'm just talking to the managers. Thank you, say. Yes, so it's an obstacle. Here, Mike, I'm just talking to the managers. Thank you, sir. Yes, so we surrounded it. Here, Mark, I'm Mrs. Salt to the Brazos.
Now, this is how manipulated
we are. Thank you, sir.
Yes, so we surrounded it. We shall overcome. Yes, we can. A man touched down on the moon. Woman, no, I'm just never. And you say, Roger, we'll ask you one more answer. And you say, Roger, we'll ask you one more answer. And you say, Roger, we'll ask you. He knows how America can change. Yes, we can. America, we have come so far. I'm supposed to make any time. And you say, yes, Mr. Time, I find this. I'm supposed to make any time. And you. Yes, we can. 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 Yes, we can.
As you say, yes, Mr. Tom, I saw you. I first must say it was him. As you say, yes, Mr. Tom, I saw you.
The spirit of a people. Yes, we can. Thank you. God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America.
No, it came straight out of the mouth of Barack Obama.
Hope you haven't been reading the Bible. Paid for by phforamerica.com.
Well, you think he's the Antichrist?
Everybody believed he was such a bad person. I don't think he was a peace person.
I know. That's a little amazing. Absolutely amazing.
That's why I didn't go for him.
I know. You're absolutely right. We are, in a second here, we're going to go to Larry Dorman's interview. And just hang on a second.
Hold on. Hand in the private sector.
Right.
How would you respond to him?
I would say that unfortunately he's right, and that our country is worse for that fact. What's happened is with free trade deals.
This is Larry Dorman with the Public Affairs Coordinator for ASME Union.
Relocation and all these corporate strategies to drive down wages and drive away jobs. What's happened is the industrial base has eroded significantly, the manufacturing and industrial base. And so for the first time ever, public service workers, unionized public service workers outnumber their private sector counterparts. And I would be the first to tell you that a truly healthy and fair economy requires heavy unionization on both sides. So what this does is isolate public service workers and make them scapegoats, which is absolutely unfair. And that's the climate we exist now, in which we now exist, where people like the Connecticut Business and Industry Association are assailing public employees such as yourself for having the temerity to have a decent wage and benefits. And really what I'm saying is that that ought to be shared by everyone.
Absolutely. What is, what do you think the prospects of the, I keep asking you, the Employee Free Choice Act?
No, I don't mind you asking it. I'm glad we can at least continue having the dialogue.
Yeah.
Clearly, that's, I think, a legislative answer that will help boost unionization. But I think for me to sit here today, post-Labor Day 2010, and say it's going to happen is you'd probably be asking me what I'm smoking. That's a function of the Democrats not having been able to muster whatever was needed to try and push it through early in the Obama administration. And so the fate of Employee Free Choice Act really does rest on the November elections. If Republicans who are uniformly pro-business, anti-worker, if they succeed in taking over either or both chambers of the House, then obviously I don't think we're going to have this discussion at all.
Does Labor have a plan? I mean, those November elections are coming up, and the polls aren't looking good for the Democrats to hold on to Congress. Do they have a plan despite that?
Well, certainly we do. All we can do, obviously, is try to mobilize union members, and I think we're off to a good start. We're doing that. In Connecticut, we are in the process of making our endorsements, and we just endorsed Dan Molloy for governor 3 weeks ago, and we're going to be doing a very intensive labor-to-labor program. We're going to be doing worksite flyers and leaflets. We're going to be talking to workers and getting workers to talk to each other on and off the job. So we're going to do the best we can, and we're going to marshal considerable resources to kind of arm our members with the information they need. And we're also going to be doing voter registration drives. So we've got a lot. There's a lot at stake.
Now, I want to ask you about this because they're talking about probably one of the lowest voter turnouts and record history, they're coming up this election. And because basically, more so from the Democratic side, what's your opinion on that? I personally can understand it because they're totally wiped out and disillusioned by the Democratic Party, especially Obama.
Right.
But man, these Republicans scared the living daylights out of me.
People seem to have such a short memory.
Yeah, I mean they don't realize that the Republicans were the guys that got us into this crap, all right? And for 9 years, and it was like hell on earth. And but the Democrats have proven themselves again.
They haven't been able to seize the moment.
Yeah, that they just can't stand up to the Republican bullying, basically.
And it's really unfortunate because in Connecticut we do have some fighters, in particular Congressman Courtney in the 2nd District, who has really tremendous leadership skills and tremendous conviction. And, you got to give Joe credit. He actually voted against the stimulus bill, whether you agree or disagree with that, because he didn't think it was the right answer. He didn't think it was all the...
Yeah, but did he vote... I don't know how he voted for the funding of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars continuing, or did he vote for the,
Oh, he's always been against the war.
Has he? Has he voted
good
against
him.
It?
Oh, yeah, he's been consistent on that front. Again, I mentioned him. He just spoke at our Council 4 delegates meeting, during which we endorsed Dan Malloy. And Joe said, he knows that it caused a little bit of unpopularity for him to vote against the stimulus, but he really felt that it was not going to help Main Street.
Did he vote for the health care bill?
He did vote for the health care bill, yes. And,
yeah, but did he fight for
that? I can't fault Democrats for having voted for that. I can raise issues about it is the commitment to having the government option, to having real reform.
That was what bothered me.
We got that, but I think you guys kind of hit it on the head. There's a real collective, kind of short-term memory loss.
Yeah.
What happened in the 8 years preceding Obama.
And that's really scary, Larry.
Well, and it is scary when you hear that it's time to continue, that we need to have the Bush tax cuts and we need to...
Exactly. And you hear that...
Let Obama and the Democrats off the hook completely, but...
I mean, can you imagine the ticket becoming Newt Gingrich and Sarah Palin or something like that?
Very much see that happening. Look, they're very good at planning. They're very good at strategizing.
Oh, yeah.
And they're very good at demonizing. I mean, I kind of circle back to what Lyle asked me at the top of the show about the decline in private sector union workers. And what that's created is this incredible animus, this incredible ill will that's been artificially manufactured by the Republican Party and big business against public sector unions. We're not the Wall Street greedheads who got us into this mess. We're not the financiers and the bankers and the investment giants and so on and so forth who actually created this economic mess that led to the steep drop in revenues that caused state and local budget cuts. We have nothing to do with that, and yet somehow,
we're taking the hit for it.
Taking the hit for it, exactly, Lyle.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why...
So unfair.
The mood is frighteningly low, and I think that, that's why I say I think it goes back to that question at the top of the show, and what the Republicans are really good at doing is demonizing, being negative. They've got their Amen Corner in Fox News, and so we're trying to kind of cut through all of that white noise and all that static and trying to get our members to understand what the stakes are in the elections. But, if you're asking me, Do I share your concern? Absolutely.
Yeah, I'm really nervous.
There's a lot of indifference out there, a lot of frustration with the economy, so it's going to be interesting to see what kind of turnout there is.
Yeah, I was shocked that Feingold was having such trouble, and I thought he was pretty popular. Has been all he was doing.
It's like everything, all bets are off.
He was the only guy, and he was the only guy in the Senate who never voted for the, who didn't refuse to vote for the Patriot Act.
I gave him a lot of credit.
Oh, yeah, I always have, because I thought he was all right. But then, you start getting cozy with Bush there toward the end. of Bush's term, and then
Maybe he's paying a little bit of a price for that.
Yeah, it looked like he was going down the same drain as the rest of the Democrats did. Yeah, 206. I mean, they betrayed us so badly, you know, in 206 that, you know, there was no remedy after Nancy refused the impeachment, and after she, you know, refused all this stuff. And Murtha, though I like Murtha, he kind of revealed a few of his own colors there. And,
right.
Everybody just seemed, there were no heroes.
Well, the masks seemed to drop off.
They did, and it's all cowardice, it's all corruption, it's all, you know, get me in and forget about you, you know, just, you know.
And that's the thing, is that there really is this short-term memory out there, and voters may very well lash out at the Democratic majority, and that could very well cost that Democratic majority that hold they have. So it's also very volatile, and, you know, I think in the end, people do often, those who turn out to vote their pocketbooks.
What made me laugh, about a year before, well, it was when McCain and Obama were running.
Mm-hmm.
Right before the elections, there was a great article that came out in one of the majors it was called Obama in the Box or something. And regardless of what anybody did over the next 2 years, once they got elected, they were going to be in the Bush box, okay? And they were still going to be boxed in by the crap, by the failed economy,
mm-hmm.
by all the regulations and everything that Bush stripped apart, by the Republicans stripped. No matter what they did, they could be. This article predicted it properly, that no matter how, even if they were, whoever it was that won was a super person, just absolutely a super person, super president, nothing.
He couldn't make any change.
At least the first 2 to 3 years of their presidency would be dominated by trying to correct Bush policies, by bringing back some kind of a sanity to the government. When I read it, I said he's absolutely right, and I'm seeing it now. But the mistakes that Obama has made as public PR wise, he's made tremendous mistakes. It was almost shown him to be more indifferent, if he could be possibly be more indifferent than Bush when it came to the Gulf.
I'm not sure I go that far. I watched the video and the YouTube clips of his Labor Day speech in Wisconsin, and he's kind of getting some pickup now because of that reference to the Jimi Hendrix song.
Treat him like a dog, you know, yeah.
He's finally at least kind of showing some fighting spirit. I'll agree with you. He's been awfully quiet, almost to the point of being meek.
Well, he goes to my. You know, the thing is he spends a day in Florida, and to show how nice the beaches are, and then he spends 10 days in Martha's Vineyard. You know what I mean?
I figured that's what you were referring to.
Yeah. But he's continually doing this crap. There's a bill that's trying to get passed through the House here, the Michelle Obama bill for better nutrition.
Yeah.
Right? But that
takes
bill,
money away
that
from
bill
the
takes
food stamp money away.
It takes it increases 6 cents for every school
lunch.
Yeah. All right, for better food, but it decreases $59 a month in food stamps for. Everyone was collecting food stamps now, which is I think 15% of the country,
right,
is fallen on hard times, and is dependent on food stamps. So everything they're doing is a PR nightmare for them. Okay, I don't know. It just looks bad. It looks bad.
Yeah, I mean, I don't agree that everything, but certainly, again, do I wish the president would be more aggressive? Yes. But by the same token, he hasn't always been well served by the
party itself. Yeah.
They've kind of tamped down some of his really positive instincts, and I think that's caused him some problems there.
Well, this thing with Riggs, when Briggs, Gibbs.
Oh, that was
When Gibbs attacked the progressive base. Okay. Well, what the hell? I mean, was that Gibbs talking off the top of his head, or was that?
Yeah, I thought so.
You think, or was that the actual? Was that more or less the tone of the Bush administration? The Obama administration.
Right. I thought that was just. I mean,
it's knocking guys like you, man. It's like knocking unions. It's like knocking.
Exactly, and it's.
Hey, come on! What the hell? Who you got left?
And it's Rahm Emanuel saying, F the UAW.
That's right.
Right.
That's right. That's right.
There have been a lot of Pratt falls and kind of Rube Goldbergian stumbles.
In the end,
kind of hope that. They'll pull it together in the remaining 2 years. The Republican Party has been very disciplined. They have been the party of no. They've got the media kind of co-opted in a lot of fronts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just intensified the decline that the Democrats have to make. So
who do you think is going to make it here in Connecticut?
From the congressional elections?
Yeah. And senatorial.
Yeah, I'll tell you, Dick Blumenthal's got a heck of a fight in his hands.
Oh, man. I was watching his recent commercial, but, I mean, man.
He looked a little better recently.
He's still wimping down. He still looks like a wimp.
They did point out today, which I thought he was late in coming, and I hope he continues with this, that under his opponent's watch, the several wrestlers died because of drug overdoses.
Well, that's absolutely what they need to...
And that's what they need to talk more about under her stewardship.
Yeah, but
she wasn't taking care of her employees. It got very personal,
But it means absolutely nothing because, most of your NFL,
It does mean... I disagree with you. It means everything to the voter when they have something like that in their mind.
I agree with Lila. I mean, look, here's what I'm hoping for from Blumenthal. I think that the, the feel-good ads, that you'll know I'm in your corner, that I'll fight for you, if it's a steady diet of that stuff, I think he's going to have a heck of a hard time. I would like to see him take that issue of what the WWF has done to its wrestlers.
Absolutely.
And make that central to the campaign about McMahon's fitness to be a senator, because I really do question
it. I'm not saying that might be a good way to go, but I mean, my retort, if I were McMahon, is which it basically was, is she doesn't have any responsibility to those people. If they're gonna, she doesn't.
Oh, absolutely.
No,
the buck stops with the top person. I disagree with you.
Run a company where the health and safety standards are lax, where
mm-hmm.
your employees are, even if your employees are knowingly and willfully allowing themselves to be abused, it's happening on your watch.
But if you look at Roger Clemens and you look at A-Rod, and you look at all these guys, all right, and then you look at, even the Olympics were crying out loud. With all the strict drug test thing and all this and that and everything, it still gets through.
Right.
So, I don't think
But these
I don't
people
think
died. These
case.
People died. It's a very strong case because what they've done is they've...
What's going on in WWF.
Yeah.
You have people dying. You have no union. So the workers actually can't negotiate a drug policy. Mm-hmm. It's, basically... Do this stuff, or you perish anyway. From a competitive standpoint, because you won't part of the game, and look, Jesse Ventura, God bless his soul, he's been out there blasting, the McMahons long before she was running for senator in Connecticut, saying that without a union, the competitors in WWF have no health and safety protection.
Right.
They have no ability to bargain for better wages and working conditions. They have no way to hold management accountable. So it really is, to me, if that's how she manages WWF, which is to turn a blind eye and deny the workers a union and to say that they're on their own, I don't want that person as my senator.
I don't either, and I don't like the way those people are treated at all.
Yeah.
You know, they're working.
I hear what you're saying. You're absolutely right. I mean, the decision to inject yourself with performance-enhancing drugs and, you know, and stimulants, obviously that is ultimately a personal, competitive decision.
And you choose that crazy profession.
But again, I'll say to you that in other sports, you have unions where they at least now negotiate these policies, where they have drug testing, and where the culture has shifted from anything goes to, preventing it.
Yeah.
And that doesn't exist in the WWF because they're virulently anti-union.
And they're not even, I just think that
you wouldn't, if you were the CEO of a company and this was going on, I know you well enough that you wouldn't want that happening and you wouldn't allow it to happen.
But that's considered more entertainment. You know,
but those people work under conditions where they're in horrible pain.
People are getting sick. But sports is entertainment too.
That's true.
So I would like to see Blumenthal go more to hammer that that message home. That would do much more for him, I think. He's going to fight hard.
I agree. You know, and again, I think we're all kind of waiting for Dick to come out swinging a little bit more aggressively.
He's got to show that.
Advocating for his record, on his record of fighting for consumers and for workers.
Yeah.
And he has done a heck of a lot to try and fight for workers like the machinists of Pratt & Whitney and the workers and the communication workers of America at AT&T. So clearly he's going to be a better senator than Linda McMahon ever would be.
Now, what is the status with the workers at Pratt and Whitney? They're not allowed to move out of the country, correct?
Right. They have won the court case, but
right.
Pratt is
appealing
layoffs ahead of their contract negotiations, and Pratt is pull out every stop they can to move that Cheshire plant and parts of East Hartford to China.
They've already decimated Connecticut for their
They have, because I think the machinist membership has gone from like 5,000 to 1,000 again. Circling back to what we discussed at the top of the show.
They used to have a huge plant plants everywhere. And
just think about this, that, you know, this is something to contemplate for Labor Day and beyond. In the mid-60s, there were roughly, one in three American workers had a union card. You know, wages were higher. There was a robust, strong middle class. And as the private sector has been decimated willfully by, government policies, by corporate greed, the private sector manufacturing and industrial base has shrunk. And this is why I think we're talking about a lot of the things we're talking about. This is why we're in the mess that we find ourselves. There are not good jobs out there for people to have. And that's really the struggle that's going on, is how are we going to create decent paying, family-supporting jobs that enable families to survive and to flourish and to be able to buy goods and services, to be able to send their kids to school.
Yeah.
And that's what it's supposed to be about.
And the effect of that is, and then those people can pay their real estate taxes and everything else, and we'd be in better shape.
Exactly. And you know, when you have, one in three workers, as you did in the 60s, obviously you had a fairer, you had an economy where prosperity was broader based, and we've gotten so far away from that. It's very, very alarming. And corporate America right now, they're seizing the day. There's a global recession going on, and you see the mess that's going on in this country. And clearly, corporate profits are going way up. The banks are doing well after everything that's happened.
Amazing, isn't it?
So, what's going on. And there was a wonderful editorial that I would encourage folks to read. Harold Meyerson on Labor Day had a piece in the Washington Post, and he's syndicated around the country. Is basically that American employers, you know, have basically they've imposed the cost of the recession and the cost of doing business on their workers, and they're keeping the profits for themselves, and that's what's going on.
And I think that's true, and it's up to us to get that message out, and we appreciate the fact that you talked to us the day after Labor Day, and,
yep. And every day.
And and keep on working for working hard for unions and Connecticut workers, and we all appreciate it.
And we're sticking with the union.
I love you guys for it.
Hey, they should come up with that song again, though.
Yeah, we need to revive it. In fact, I'm going to have to send you a funny video about Ask Me that I can't tell you about on the air, but I'll make sure that you email it to you.
Well, you know, even send a if you got a recording of that song, I'll play it.
Okay, yeah. I will. I have a radio.
Remember that one?
Got a lot of F-bombs in it, but it's very funny. But it,
right.
Well, we'll look forward to that.
Yeah, and you can decide how you share it with your listeners.
Okay, well, thank you, Larry, thanks for being with us.
Happy anniversary.
And happy anniversary.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Bye-bye.
Good night. That was Larry Dorman from the Aspen Union, and we're right to the end of our show, so we need to say good night, folks. And Leo, happy trails.
Okay, I want to thank everyone for listening. I hope this recorded this. It seems like it's recording, but I'm not certain if you got the last part of this show. Anyway, that was Larry Dorman. Tomorrow night's show, please join us when I'll be discussing a new book called The Comets of God. And on Friday night with George Dixon, we'll be discussing part of this book. We'll be discussing the book with the author, Jeffrey Goodman. And I think you're going to find it fascinating. The book's not out yet. I'm working from a galley copy here, but it's absolutely amazing. And it talks about how comets were the reason for cataclysmic events on Earth, according to biblical, based on so many biblical and accounts and the Revelation and so on. And we'll be talking about that tomorrow night, Thursday night. So join us then, and of course join us Friday night when we speak to the author, Jeffrey Goodman. So good night.